Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Men's Spiritual Radio Hour with Mike Snyder and Mark Rawson here on Spiritual Connections Radio.
Everybody to the Men's Spiritual Radio Hour. This is Mark Rawson, and I'm really excited to have all of you listening either to the main show or to the replays. We are on once a month on Spiritual Connections Radio, and you can find out more about this shows and other shows by going to our website at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. Hey, Mike, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, pretty good. Good to be here, Mark.
Yeah, we were all kind of sharing about the weather and everything like that, and I was just about to tell you that, you know, I just got back from my trip from Albuquerque and New Mexico and Santa Fe and Sedona and stuff like that. I tell you, I go to Sedona over and over again, and I absolutely love it.
Oh, me too. I always, every time I get the opportunity to go out there, it's just, it's so mystical and so much to see.
Yeah, I think what was really surprising to me is, of course, you know, anywhere from Texas all the way over to Scottsdale, Arizona, which is where I was staying, you know, it was basically 100 degrees, was pretty much the temperature almost 24 hours a day. Scottsdale, Arizona was 102 to 104 at night, and that just totally blew my mind.
Yeah, you know, you could basically fry an egg on the roof.
Yeah. And, you know, the interesting part is, you know, we of course went up to the Grand Canyon and did the drive back through the forest down to Phoenix again. And, you know, coming down from the Grand Canyon, it's about 66 degrees at night. So, you know, the girls thought I was crazy when I told them they had to pack jackets for the trip.
Yep.
All right, Mike, why don't you tell us a little bit about who we have on for the show this evening.
Okay, well, we're real excited tonight. We have Marcus Ray, and a little bit about Marcus is he received his training in the arts. He holds an MFA in painting from the Tyler School of Art at Temple University in Philadelphia, PA. He's also a writer and a poet. He brings spirituality and sensuality together in these mediums of expression. He's the author of a major work called Odes to the Divine Mother, which contains 365 prose poems in praise of the divine feminine energy. Along with the odes are his paintings and images of the Divine Mother created around the world in his mission with Sandra Ray. And this work that he's doing will be available, it looks like, this month on Amazon. Some other things about Marcus is he's a presenter of the profound psychological spiritual scripture, The Course in Miracles, so we're going to talk more about that tonight. And in all of his paintings, writings, and lectures, Marcus creates a quiet atmosphere of peace and clarity that's an invitation to go deeper into the realms of inner stillness, silence, and beauty. He teaches, writes, and paints alongside of Sandra Ray, and many have been touched by their demonstration of a holy relationship in action. His iconic paintings of the Masters can be viewed on his website, which I guess there's going to be several websites that we're going to give out today. And he creates while with his twin flame Sandra, lecturing in seminars. So, yeah, it's really great to have you on tonight, Marcus. Thanks for being
on the show. Thank you. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Mark. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's great having you on. I know it took quite a while to get everything scheduled because I know you and Sandra have been busy traveling and lecturing around the world. So, we were really excited to finally be able to nail down a date and get you on. So,
yeah.
Welcome to the show.
I'm very happy to be here.
So, as you know, Marcus, for this particular show, we like to talk about you know, talk to men about their journeys and everything like that. So, you know, have you always been spiritual? Were you born spiritual? Or, you know, did you have some story? You know, tell us how it all started and, you know, where you are today.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, like many other people, I had a very conventional upbringing in a church. You know, my parents were, my father was Catholic and my mother was Methodist, and I was brought up in a small town in Ohio, and, you know, the Sunday school kind of every weekend thing, and my mother was very attentive to our church going, but it was kind of like everyone else. You go once a week, and then the rest of the week you forget about it. So I was very spiritually inclined, but in the area of the arts, and I knew that I didn't want to really have a conventional education. I was always interested in painting and drawing, even though I was a very good student in math and science and English and those sorts of things. I was always drawn to the creative aspects of my, you know, my schooling. And I went to art school as a result, the Cleveland Institute of Art, for my undergraduate work. And then when I graduated, I spent a couple years as an independent artist. And then I did my master's degree, like Mike said, in Philadelphia at Temple University. So, and I remember one of my professors said, you know, artists are basically spiritual in nature. So I think that being in the arts, I was always inclined toward a spiritual life. But then when I got out of college, I knew there was something more than just painting pictures. And so I started to ask, you know, deeper spiritual questions. And I had a friend who was doing yoga at the time. This was in the early 1980s, where it wasn't so prevalent as it is now. And I did some courses with her master, Yogi Bhajan, and he taught these yoga classes in different parts of the country, and I did some retreats. So that kind of got me launched in a deeper spiritual life with the yoga. And then within that time frame, the early 1980s, like 1984 to 86, I did some rebirthing, which is a form of breathing that gets you in touch with a lot of your early childhood memories, and even back as far as memories from your birth. And so I went through this process of rebirthing along with the yoga, and it was a very powerful experience, you know, as far as looking at how your thoughts produce your reality and what kinds of memories you have that are recreating themselves, especially the negative ones. You want to try to locate those and free yourself from some of those subconscious memories that can go all the way back to your birth. So I went through this process of rebirthing, and at some point I met Sandra Ray around 1985. She was one of the major proponents and teachers of rebirthing in the U.S. and also around the world. And so I got to know her work a little bit, and she became one of my teachers. And she introduced me at that time to this book called A Course in Miracles. Probably many of your listeners have heard of that. And it's a very important work that has come out of America. It was channeled by a psychologist in New York, Dr. Helen Schuchman. And she received these messages or intimations from kind of a spiritual place, and went so far as to say this was the Christ mind speaking to her, and she scribed it down, and with a colleague they took, I think it was 6 years to scribe this book, and then in the late 70s it came out, it was published. So by the time I met Sandra Ray in 1985, Sandra was teaching and sharing this material, The Course in Miracles. So that was another thing that I owed Sandra for. One of my spiritual, you know, missions was to study The Course in Miracles. And eventually I met another teacher, Tara Singh, who Dr. Schuchman had groomed to present the Course in Miracles, and I studied with Tara Singh for 17 years to see what I could glean from the Course in Miracles. So that was kind of my early spiritual evolution, and I can elaborate on that however you'd like.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, well, I'd like to hear a little bit more about how everything progressed after that point, because it sounds mm-hmm. very fascinating so far.
Yeah. Well, like I say, I was very intensely interested in Sandra Ray's work. She's a writer. She's written 20 books on rebirthing and spiritual matters and travel to India, and she has introduced me. She was really the first person to introduce me to India. And even back then, almost 25 years ago, she was taking a group of students every year to India, to this ashram in northern India where Babaji, this immortal master Babaji, had his home. So I went on this India quest with her a couple of times in 1987 and 1989, and that really opened up my eyes. And also at that time I was studying the Course in Miracles. So I went to India with her. I was doing the rebirthing, studying the Course in Miracles. And then in 1989, I met this gentleman, Tara Singh, like I said, who was sharing with serious students of the Course in Miracles. And I was so taken by him. Everything else dropped away, and that became my major spiritual path with him for 17 years. I studied with him from 1989 to when he passed away in 2006. So that was my development. And then I was telling Mark I had been married for 30 years during some of that time. But after Tara Singh passed away in 2006, my marriage was coming to an end, and we were both growing in different ways. So by 2007, I was separated. And then almost miraculously, Sandra Ray came back into my life. I was living in Philadelphia, and I hadn't seen Sandra in almost 20 years. And I got this flyer in the mail that she was giving a workshop in Philadelphia, and I hadn't even been aware of her work for many years. So I thought, well, I'm just going to go and meet her and express my gratitude, because I realized how many things that she had opened my eyes to spiritually I really owed to her. You know, I never would have studied the Course in Miracles had it not been for her. And one of the things she said in a workshop was, this is the most important book written in 2,000 years, describing the Course in Miracles. And that really got my attention. And had I not heard that from her, who knows, I may never have picked the books up. I certainly would have met Tara Singh, who became my major spiritual master for all those years. So I really owed her a great, great debt of gratitude. And I went to this workshop, and then I saw her the next day after the workshop for a private consultation, and one thing led to the next, and we just saw that we had a very clear destiny together to teach around the world, to see how we could honor having a holy relationship. You know, all these things that I had been studying about in the Course in Miracles, my relationship with her was an opportunity to bring those principles into application. So that was the kind of the history of my evolution. And once I got together with Sandra in late 2007 or early 2008, it wasn't long after that we knew we were supposed to be together, and we got married in India the year after. And we've been pretty much on the road ever since. It's a fairly rigorous road schedule of teaching and sharing and writing books together. And we can talk a little bit more about that in the latter part of the show. But that's how I got together with Sandra Ray. So
that's excellent. So
yeah.
Kind of going back to some of what you spoke about, but before we go into that, why don't you go ahead and give out a few websites? So to find out more about your work, where do people go? What website is that?
Yeah, okay. Well, mostly our teaching with the breath work, which, you know, was called rebirthing and still is called rebirthing by many people who practice breath work, but we've taken it to a new expression and we call it liberation breathing. And our main website for that work with our seminars and our trips around the world and our quests, you can go to just simply sandraray.com. And that has both of our biographies and things about our work together that we teach. There are even some Course in Miracles recordings on there. If you go to the events page, it shows you what we're doing in the next 3-4 months around the world with workshops and seminars. And you can also see what some of the classes are, and our bios are on there. There's some material about Babaji. There's some material about the Divine Mother. You know, basically all the highlights of what we teach are represented on that website. And then I think you were saying my website, MarcusRay.com, is mainly my paintings. Sometimes when Sandra is teaching and I'm not up front teaching with her, I'm sort of up front in the background painting. I like to paint the spiritual masters. I've done quite a few paintings of the Divine Mother, and I use Amaji, the hugging saint, as a model. I've done a lot of paintings of her. I've done a lot of paintings of Babaji, and I've done some of Moses and other spiritual masters. Jesus, I have a lot of paintings of him, and you can see those paintings on MarcusRay.com. And then we have a couple blogs, but and Facebook, of course. You can find us on Facebook. Sandra Ray and Marcus Ray is our page. We both have profiles, Marcus Ray, Sandra Ray. So you can find us fairly easily. You can just Google Sandra Ray, and there will be many of these blogs and the URLs for those blogs if you just Google Sandra Ray. So that's easy.
Now, you had said that you had met Sandra Ray years before you actually got together with her.
Yes. She was one of my teachers. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, what was that initial experience like where, you know, did you kind of look at her and say, wow, she's a beautiful woman, you know, and but I'm married.
Well, you know, I don't think those vibrations were quite set into play back then, although I knew she was one of the most dynamic people, teachers I had ever met. And then the fact that she took people to India and introduced us to some very incredible people over there, you know, devotees of Babaji. By then, Babaji had left that manifestation. He was in that body that Sandra met from 1970 to 1984, and I didn't go to India with Sandra till 87, so he wasn't there, but the people he had left in charge were extremely evolved souls, and two of them, their names were, one was Muni Raj, and that means King of Silence, and then this other gentleman was called Sastraji, and he was a Sanskrit scholar. And even Babaji had said he had written in past lives a lot of the classic, like the Mahabharata, and he had been a poet in all lifetimes. So these two gentlemen were very evolved. And one thing I remembered about Muni Raj was when I met him, my mind came to total silence. And this was something I had never experienced before. And he was such a peaceful being that when you entered into his space, it's like your thoughts stopped. And it was very palpable. You could almost feel this peace and quiet around him. And I say that as a significant experience because when I met my teacher of A Course in Miracles, Tara Singh, I experienced the same thing with him, only from his speaking. He would speak about The Course in Miracles, and within, oh, I would say 15 or 20 minutes, your mind would be totally silent. And had I not met Muni Raj a few years prior to that, I'm not sure I would have recognized what that was. And, of course, Tara Singh had an illustrious background. He knew people like Gandhi and Nehru and Mrs. Roosevelt. And when he came to America in the 50s, he met Krishnamurti. And Krishnamurti became his teacher for all the time from the 50s to the time he met Dr. Shukman in, I think, the late 1970s. So he was very evolved. But had I not been with Sandra to India, I'm very questioning whether I would have recognized who Tara Singh was. So this relationship with Sandra Ray was kind of the basis of my real spiritual life. And I knew when I met her in 1985 or 6, she was a remarkable being and just spoke so clearly and was... You know, people, when you meet them like that, they can say one sentence and you can be transformed for your whole life. So that was the kind of being Sandra Ray was to me back then. I really considered her more my teacher. And it wasn't until after I had spent those 17 years with Tara Singh and had my ego fairly undone by that tutelage that I would have even considered having that close of a relationship with Sandra Ray. You know, back when I first met her, I still needed some slow simmering. Yeah, so that's how it came about. But I knew there was something there with Sandra, and that's what drew me to her later on in my life.
Wow, it's such an incredible story. I'm so happy that you're sharing that with us. Let me go ahead and hand this over to Mike. I know he's got some good questions for you.
Sure.
So, yeah, one of the questions I have, I'm actually looking on your website at some of your amazing paintings, and quite incredible. But I heard that you said that sometimes when Sandra's teaching, you'll be doing some painting at the same time. So do you mean like if she's at a seminar and she's teaching and doing things, you'll actually be on stage painting or be in the same room doing a painting at the same time or like during
a
meditation? Okay.
Exactly. And usually right up front there, sort of to the left or the right. So while people are listening to her teaching, they're also watching me paint for 3 days or a couple of days. You know, some of those paintings I work on for, you know, we have a loving relationships training that's Friday night, all day Saturday, and all day Sunday. So that gives me like 2.5 days to work on a piece or a series of pieces. And people can kind of see the visual development. You know, it's teaching, but it's a silent, wordless teaching. And they often are inspired. You know, oftentimes people have these creative urges, and they need to see someone also creating something to kind of give them the catalyst to express themselves. So often I've heard from people that they were inspired by watching me paint in the seminar, that they would then dig into some creative project that they had been postponing or thought they couldn't do. So it inspires them to go on and do their own, you know, creative work. And we feel that's a very valuable part of the teaching, is to... be creative on all different levels and also express something that's your own. You know, for me, because I always studied painting, it's very natural for me to use that as a mode of expression. And so to paint in front of people, it's kind of like it's like a communication just without words. And it's very natural for me. And, you know, for years I painted alone in a studio, and I thought, and then Sandra, when we got together, I didn't have my studio anymore. And Sandra says, well, why don't you just paint in the trainings? And I said, well, you've got to be kidding. What, You may like travel around and buy paints and canvas and why don't you just do that? And so every city we would go, I would find an art supply store. I'd go in, I'd buy some canvas, some paints, and just stretch it up on the wall and get to work, you know? And I found it was very exhilarating and oftentimes more creative, because when people are, you have an audience watching you do it, it's like you automatically have to get into this state of being where you're not self-conscious, you know? You're just flowing with it. People are watching you. It is kind of like a meditation. You go into this altered state. You're very absorbed by it. And that's kind of how I come up with the final product. I just, you know, get into a meditation about painting Babaji or the Divine Mother, and I start somewhere, and in 3 days I end up where I end up, and usually the results are something that I couldn't have come up with had I not been in that environment, you know. So I find it very fun, and it's my own expression. And Sandra loves it too, because a lot of the material she's been teaching is her material, and I do share part of the seminar on the Course in Miracles. Sometimes I'll give a couple lectures during the weekend on the Course in Miracles, and I feel that that's my authentic work. But a lot of the work on rebirthing, breathwork, relationships, family patterns, that's been Sandra's baby, her work for 35 years. So it's best for me to just let her take over on that, and then I do what I do best in the background, doing this creative work. So that's kind of how it looks, and we have a good time.
I find it very fascinating, because I have a similar experience myself, but instead of painting, I do healing music, and all the healing music that I do mostly on my electric keyboard. I do have a Tibetan singing bowl and a couple other sound healing instruments, but most of it's done on the keyboard. I'm not traditionally trained in music the way somebody normally would, so everything comes to me basically channeled or improv, you know. And, you know, when I play for meditation groups and different things, I'm really working off the energy of the people in the room. Like, I know how high of a frequency I can take the music when we get to the height of the meditation by the vibes I'm getting from the room or what the meditation is. And the other fascinating thing is both Mark and I have a very close friend. Her name is Brigida, and in fact, her and I and Mark do another show here on the Blog Talk Radio once a month called the Saint Germain Radio Show. And basically, she channels information, kind of like you when you talked about Course in Miracles. Well, you know, she does her channeling from Ascended Masters like Saint Germain and so forth. And when she gets into the different guided parts of the meditation, there's different sequences where I play the music. And, you know, it's what's fascinating is, and this is what I wanted to ask you, is, you know, my friend Brigitte and I work very often together in different seminars around the Pennsylvania, New Jersey area, and even in New York State. We started doing some Ascended Master retreats that she offers up there. But, you know, what I noticed is there's a certain amount of a telepathic connection. And interesting for her and I is that once in a while, if we tune in together, and I'm talking about tuning in spiritually to the other dimensions, I've actually been able to compose music that she'll hold a certain kind of energy, and the music that I come through with, sometimes it's almost easier for me to bring it through than it has been when I've channeled the energy by myself, you know.
Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, I also do individual sessions for people too, so, and Mark has had many of them with me where I play music just for that particular person, and I record it and they take it on a CD to play home. So again, that's like a telepathic connection, and also working with spirit guides and so forth. But, you know, what I find interesting is, you know, I've worked with several other people in some of the metaphysical churches too with the music, and you do kind of like, you kind of have like a silent, so to speak, telepathic connection with that person that's doing the presenting, or to stay in sync with that person that's delivering the message when you're doing the music or when you're doing the painting. But like you said, too, I think in addition to that, you also kind of almost have a telepathic connection with the audience, in that you can just feel, you know, because you probably would agree with me, is every single retreat or seminar or class you do, even if you're always presenting the same kind of material, they're all different. Would you agree with
absolutely,
that?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. And you're right, you know, when I'm painting, I'm listening to what Sandra is saying, and I'm listening to the response of the audience, and I'm kind of tuning into that. And, you know, sometimes there are sections that are a little more difficult, you know, like one of the things Sandra and I teach people is to try to let go of anger and judgments. And those sections, you would be surprised how many people want to defend their anger, and they don't want to forgive people from their past that they've felt have done them wrong. So often in those sections, I'll be painting, and, you know, it'll be a tough kind of a process, and Sandra will call me over to help in those, you know, those situations where it needs two of us, you know, sitting up front, helping people get through these things. So yeah, you're very sensitive to the energy of the group and what's being said. And, you know, by no means do I turn myself totally off. I mean, I'm listening to what people are saying as I'm in this sort of painting meditation. So, you know, it's not this or that. It's kind of an organic thing. And I'm sure when you're composing your music, you're hearing your presenter and the response of the audience, and that also contributes to the good, you know, to the good work that you're doing with the music. So yeah, it's an organic thing that's all connected.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of interesting because it reminds me there was only a few times I ever experimented with this, but there was a couple people in the past who were artists that they had painted, or whether it was paint or chalk or watercolors, you know, there was different materials that were used the three or four different times I experimented this. But I had some friends that were artists that would actually do a piece of artwork simultaneously while I was playing. And it was so amazing because, you know, when I got done playing the music and I looked at the artwork, they actually had brought out some of the colors and some of the feelings and visions, you know, because when I play with my eyes closed. I mean, I'm not looking at the piano. I'm not composing notes or anything like that, like a traditional way. It's all feeling for me, you know. And what happens is, I might see different visions of different colors or different shapes or different things that come to me. And so there were a few times, like I said, when the person painting brought out that expression in color, I was like, it was amazing because it was almost very similar to what I saw in my own mind's eye while playing the music. So it's that connection, that telepathic connection, or just the energy that goes out in doing a creative work of whatever it is in conjunction with, you know, another kind of creative work. I mean, just phenomenal. And, you know, like I said, I was looking at your pieces on your page, on your website there, and I can only imagine just how much joy and excitement it must bring to you to start something from scratch like that and have no idea what's going to come out when you're done. You know, I bet you probably have no idea what it's going to be.
well, you know, I kind of owe it to Sandra Ray for inspiring me onward, because when we got together and I left my old life and, you know, I had a studio of a couple thousand square feet where I could just, you know, bang around and make big paintings and leave everything lying right where it was. And now I had no studio, and she didn't make that a problem. She just said, oh, well, just paint in the trainings. And to her, there was no limitation. And I think in my own mind, I had to get over my concepts and my limitations when it came to that. And then when I just started doing it, you know, it seemed a little kind of naive at first, but then the more I painted in the trainings and I saw the results, and the results were to me kind of phenomenal, it just became a natural expression of our work together. And so, yeah, we discovered this way of working, and I think I owe that to, you know, to Sandra for inspiring me and giving me a possibility that I wouldn't have thought of. And once I was in the rhythm of it and in the flow of it, it just seemed so natural like, oh yeah, shouldn't I have always been doing this, you know? So yeah, I know.
No.
I know exactly what you mean. It's something that feeds the creativity, and it is the creativity, you know. So
yeah,
it's a means and an end all at the same time. And I think, you know, you look back on it, you know, I have, so many paintings that aren't even on that website. I look back at these last 5-6 years of all the paintings I've done, and I can kind of scratch my head and wonder, did I do all those, and how did I do them? You know, it's sometimes you even surprise yourself. You have no idea how it could have come about if it weren't for higher forces working through you, doing the work. You know, and especially with this new work I'm doing called Odes to the Divine Mother. You know, it's like 365 prose poems to the Divine Mother, but it's probably as well about 40 or 50 paintings that I've done with the Divine Mother theme over the last 6 years. So this book has taken, you know, 5-6 years to come into being. But now that I look back on it, I kind of scratch my head and wonder how could it have happened, you know? It was such a monumental task. If I would have set out to do it consciously and said, I'm going to write this book on the Divine Mother, or I'm going to paint these paintings of the Divine Mother, I probably would have got sidetracked. But because it was so natural, I was doing it anyway. I was, you know, I always journaled, I always wrote. And then my theme of the Divine Mother and the paintings, because Sandra is so much into that, it seemed so natural. And then before I realized it, I had enough material to put together in a book. So that's how these things come about. You don't often plan them, but the natural rhythm of how your life goes is so creative. You know, then you look back on a body of work and you say, oh, yes, that's what that was about. Or, you know, even in the bigger picture, when I see my 17 years I spent with Tara Singh studying the Course in Miracles, I probably wouldn't have been prepared for this mission with Sandra Rae had I not gone through that. So at the time, you're not thinking, oh, well, I'm doing this in order to do this other thing, but it kind of unfolds, and when it unfolds, it has, you know, a natural flowering. And my natural flowering is to be doing this work with Sandra Rae. So,
yeah.
Thank you, Mike. That's exactly how things work.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating to talk about that because, you know, I have a similar situation too. I must have years and years worth of different recordings spread out among 4 computers and CDs, cell phones, cassette tapes, you know, and many that probably nobody else but me has ever heard, you know, and it's like, you know, I'm just, when I get in the spur of the moment and I come up with some kind of melody or tune or some kind of music, you know, I might just record it spur of the moment. And then, you know, every once in a while, like something might come back into my head and I refer back to it, or I find a recording randomly one day that I forgot that I did, you know, and the same story for me too. You know, I had a very close group of friends about 10 years ago, all of who, of which I'm still involved with, at this, spiritual center, this new age store, and up until that point I just played the music for myself, and they really convinced me to start playing for other people, and it grew, and many of those people I still work with today. So it is really an amazing process, you know, and there's always so much to be grateful for when your creativity is allowed to be spread out and appreciated and shared with others, you know. And sometimes we just have those go-to people in our lives that say, hey, you know, give yourself some more credit. You have something good here, and share it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, Mark, I'm going to hand it back over to you.
Sounds good. So let's just take a quick break and let everybody know you're listening to The Men's Show, The Men's Spiritual Radio Hour, on Spiritual Connections Radio. We're on once a month, and you can find out more about our guests, including Marcus Rae, who's on this evening, and his links for his website are up on our webpage at spiritualconnectionsradio.com. So much stuff that we covered. I'm actually going to take a step back with you for a second, Marcus, and ask you, what is A Course in Miracles? Because there's some people listening to the show that are going to have no idea what that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's a deep and broad question, and I think people need to know what A Course in Miracles is. It's a psychological, spiritual work. It's kind of written in like a curriculum or a course format, and it's designed to awaken the person to their spiritual self or their higher self. You know, the course was scribed by this lady I mentioned before, Dr. Helen Schuchman. She was a clinical psychologist at Columbia University, and she was highly professional, highly scientific, and at some point in her career, which was very academic, she was well respected in her academic field, working at Columbia. But she noticed that in their department, their clinical psychology department, there was a lot of conflict. There was a lot of fighting, infighting, competition, bad feelings. And her colleague, William Thetford, who was also her boss, came to her one day and said, you know, I've noticed we're supposed to be helping people, but even within our own department, we have all this conflict and anger and disappointment. And he said, there must be another way to live. And since we're in the helping profession, we must be able to find this other way. So Dr. Schuchman looked at him and said, well, you know, I agree with everything you said, and I will help you find this other way. So almost as if on cue, she started getting these very vivid dreams that were kind of spiritual in nature, religious in nature. They were very disconcerting to her. She was a scientist. She wasn't, you know, an artist or a religious person. She was more agnostic than anything else. But she had studied a lot of comparative religions over the years. So she started getting these very vivid dreams that were disconcerting, and she shared these with her colleague, and he said, well, you know, why don't you write down these dreams in a book, which she did. She took notes. And then before long, she started hearing this voice. And now when you're a clinical psychologist and you start hearing voices, your first conclusion is that you're going a little nuts. You know, insane asylums are full of people that hear Jesus talking to them, right? So she was starting to question her own sanity. And she started hearing this voice, and the voice said, this is Jesus, and I want you to write some things down. So she told her colleague, she kept it very secretive, and she told her colleague William Thetford about this. And he said, well, don't judge yourself too much. Why don't you just write down what this voice is telling you, and we'll see if it has any validity. So that's what she did. She kept this dictation in these notebooks. And she would bring it in, you know, she would come in early in the morning to her work, and Dr. Thetford would type up the manuscript. And this went on for 6 years. And after a few months of doing this dictation and this scribing and then the typing, and they were reading the material, they were finding that it was so profound that it could just maybe be this Christ mind or this Christ voice speaking through her to be taken down. So they kept this very secretive because in their prospective professional field, this wouldn't have been looked at as so scientific, but they did it in a very orderly manner, and they took this material down for, I think it was 6 years. And then this is what became The Course in Miracles. And it was written in three parts. There was a text, which was very, very theoretical, very philosophical. And then there was a workbook, which was a series of 365 lessons that you would undertake to do for one a day for a year. And then there was a shorter volume called The Teacher's Manual, which was like questions and answers and definition of terms and things like that. So that's pretty much the structure of the Course in Miracles, the text, the workbook, and the teacher's manual. And you might ask, well, what is the purpose of the Course in Miracles? Well, the Course in Miracles would say you basically have the self or the ego that you made up or your personality, and then you have the self that's connected to your divine source that everyone shares, and that self is your higher self or your Christ mind or your Christ self. You could easily just call it your Buddha self or, you know, your enlightened self. And the purpose of the Course is to undo your ego and forgive your ego and live in this other vibration of your higher self or your Christ self. And it does that through a series of lessons. It talks a lot about forgiveness, letting go of the past, letting go of your judgments, healing relationships. You know, these are some of the active tools that are in the Course in Miracles to help you move through a lot of your stuck places in your life, your grievances you hold towards people from your past, judgments of people from your past, and to let go. And basically, forgiveness is really the operative tool. And when you find that you can forgive others from your past, you can also forgive yourself, and you can be in this space of seeing your higher self, seeing your innocence, you know, seeing the glory of who you are as God created you, not the ego who's full of problems. So that's basically the action of the Course in Miracles. And it's revolutionary.
No, that's a good explanation, Marcus. I mean, for you, what is the one thing that you got out of it that really transformed your spiritual life?
Well, I think my relationship with Tara Singh was an interesting man. Like I said, he had known people like Gandhi and Nehru and Mrs. Roosevelt, and then he was in those sort of political arenas when he first came to America, you know, with the starting of the United Nations and some of the people who came from India to represent India. He knew them very well. And then he met Krishnamurti, who basically opened his eyes to see that to lead a truly spiritual life, you have to transcend politics and all divisions of any kind, nationalism and all those sorts of things. So he started, you know, studying with Krishnamurti for many years. And then at the end of that, he went into this period of silence. And when he came out of silence, he was in silence for 3 years, he was introduced to the Course in Miracles, and then he met Dr. Shukman, who kind of groomed him to be a presenter or a teacher of the Course in Miracles. So I think my relationship with him, which the Course would call a holy relationship, you know, it distinguishes between special relationships of our ego, where we're often in relationships for what we can get from the other for ourselves, and it calls that a special relationship versus a holy relationship where we're together for the evolution of our souls, and we're ascending the ladder of our own holiness, and we're waking ourselves up to this Christ consciousness. That would be called a holy relationship. And I would say my relationship with Tara Singh, who was personally groomed by Dr. Shukman to teach this material, and, you know, with his tremendous background with great beings, I would say my relationship with him was the best thing that came out of my work with the Course in Miracles. And I think Sandra would agree, having a spiritual master, her master being Babaji, you know, it's something very essential when you're serious about your evolution to have someone who's already taken some of those steps that you're also trying to take yourself. There, you know, there are a few steps ahead of you, or maybe many steps ahead of you. And in India, we call that principle of right association. You want to put yourself with the highest people who will force you to adapt upward. It's like if you wanted to learn great tennis, you would study with someone who's from, you know, won Wimbledon. You wouldn't study with someone who's, you know, not at the highest level. So if you're serious about going all the way, you want to put yourself with spiritual masters, or if you want to play the cello, you know, study with someone like Yo-Yo Ma. You know, you want to put yourself with people way up there so that they will pull you up and help you adapt upward. So I think that's my relationship with Tara Singh and the Course in Miracles. I can't even separate the two. I wouldn't even know what the Course in Miracles was in essence had it not been for my relationship with Tara Singh. And that's my next book, by the way. I've written a book called Miracles with My Master Tara Singh, and that'll be out in probably early next year sometime, about my 17 years with him.
Wow.
Yeah, so
that,
the Course in Miracles
really good.
The Course in Miracles, Tara Singh would say, is the greatest gift for mankind that has come out of America. He would call it the New World. And he would say that the Course in Miracles, finally, America has done something spiritually evolved, greater than the Founding Fathers, greater than the Declaration of Independence. This spiritual work is on the level of, you know, the Vedas, the Bible, the Upanishads, all rolled in together. And it came out of New York City, the busiest city in the world, out of the USA, in these times. So it's really our greatest gift to the rest of the world, bar none. So we can be proud that it came out of our country, you know.
Excellent. Thank you. Mike, why don't you go ahead and ask one last question before we end the show?
Oh, okay. Well, actually, I did want to get into a different subject. I guess you mentioned one of the things that that Sandra gets into is the breath work.
Yes.
And the one thing I just wanted to just to mention in general is, you know, it's interesting how we talked about, you know, fueling our creativity and our passions and everything. And sometimes life can be really a challenge of duality too. You know, like myself, I work in the IT industry doing computers and networking and stuff like that. And then I know Mark has been in that field for many years too. And, you know, so sometimes, you know, your true spiritual self, sometimes you feel lost when you're doing your work and everything. But you know, what I found is through breath work, you know, I've taken yoga for several years and studied different kinds of yoga and everything, but you know, you don't always have the opportunity to walk up from your desk at work and, you know, just do yoga in the middle of the office or sneak in the bathroom and do it. So, you know, what I find with the breath work is it's so important, even if it's like 5 or 10 minutes and even at your desk where nobody notices, is to do deep breathing, you know, and it's such a powerful exercise that in that moment of those few minutes, you really can just start to calm yourself and release and bring yourself back into a place of peace. And so I just wondered if you had any comments to expand upon that theory there. Yeah, I think I might have lost you there.
Different breathing rhythms. You know, pranayama is often talked about in yoga, which is a little different than rebirthing. It's more of holding the breath in combination with taking in the breath. So there's that form of breathing. I mean, there's many different forms of breathing, but all of them have a commonality in that they do something to your system to calm it down, to ground it. You know, when you talk about the breath, it's the most essential to life. I mean, you could live without food for a month. You could probably live without water for a week or two, but you couldn't live without breath for more than 3 minutes. So it's the most essential element to living in the physical body. So that's why the yogis have placed such an emphasis on the breath as a transformative and healing tool when you're conscious of it. And we call breath work or liberation breathing conscious connected breathing. So as you're doing this very smooth, circular, deep breathing when you're lying down and you're taking in all this energy, you're also watching your mind and watching your thoughts and watching how the subconscious thoughts surface to the conscious. So it's a way of bringing the subconscious to the conscious through this circular conscious breath, you know, that we call rebirthing or liberation breathing. So, and it's so simple. It's just, you know, basically deep connected circular breathing that require, you can learn it in 5 minutes. It's no big deal. But what we found when you're doing this breathing in the presence of someone who's already released a lot of their subconscious material, it helps you clear things from your past that may be stuck, you know. So it's a very physically grounding, palpable process that helps you clear your past, whereas you may not just be able to do that with your mind. I mean, your mind is a powerful tool, but in conjunction with your breath, the breath tends to be a catalyst for bringing up things from your subconscious mind that maybe would be suppressed otherwise. So looking at the mind in conjunction with this deep connected breathing that we call liberation breathing, it's a very powerful tool for inner transformation. And the result is usually more peace, more clarity, more love, more sensitivity. So we think it's the fastest transformative thing that we can offer people, liberation breathing. And you can read about it on SandraRay.com's website there. And
okay.
So welcome. Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's such a basis, a pillar of our work is the breathing process. You know, for years it was called rebirthing. And then we've added this spiritual dimension to it with the Divine Mother energy, and we call that liberation breathing. And we've written a book about it, too. It's just simply called Liberation Breathing, The Divine Mother's Gift. You can find it on Amazon and read all about it.
Okay. Excellent. So thank you for being on the show this evening. Just to make sure I got the website correct, that's www.sonaray.com. That's SONDRARAY.com. And mm-hmm. we also have your website, which is MarcusRay.com. That's MarcusRay.com. And make sure to tell everybody, or I should say for everybody, go ahead and check out his work, Marcus Ray. His work is coming out on Amazon, and make sure to go and check that out. And with that, I want to say thank you, Marcus, and, of course, thank you, Mike, as always, for being on the show.
Thank you, Ben. Yes. It was very enjoyable. I hope we have some other shows together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, we'll definitely want to have you and Sonia Ray back soon. So I'll be reaching out to both of you about that, and just want to say goodnight to everybody. You've been listening to the Men's Spiritual Radio Hour on Spiritual Connections Radio.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.